Shut up and sit down. Hi everybody, welcome back to the Sinistar podcast, part of the Clone Star podcast. Today I am joined again by my good co-host, Ed English, the future of law enforcement himself, Ed 209. Ed, thank you very much for coming back on the podcast again.
Good evening, show. I look forward to enforcing your compliance.
Ed, I'm going to ask you a question straight out. We had discussed this just after we finished recording of the last podcast, and you told me something absolutely shocking, which was you have never seen RoboCop. How Correct. Is that even possible?
It just never happened. It never crossed my radar. It was never there, and it still is never there when you're flicking through the channels. It's never just on. You never just see it. Like, so I told you that, and then like the phone line went dead, and 3 minutes later you were kicking my door in with a copy of the DVD in your hand.
And I do recall when you were actually watching it, you sent me some of the funniest messages I've ever seen. How absolutely enthralled by the whole movie that you actually were.
It just sucks right in. It's built a whole universe, and it drops you straight into the universe so fast. It's really, really well constructed, the whole world that it lives in.
I was watching the on Netflix the movies that made us earlier on, and they were talking about the movie, and like the best way to describe it is there's so many layers to it, and when you watch it, like being a kid, I think so many of the layers are just completely over your head. But then when you get older, you're going, oh my God, that's absolutely completely accurate. Before we get into it, let's just get through some of the details on it. So RoboCop 1987, directed by Paul Verhoeven, written by Ed Neumeier and Michael Miner. The tagline of the movie, part man, part machine, all cop. What a wonderful way to describe it. IMDb rating 7.6 out of 10, 258,000 votes. And Rotten Tomatoes has a 91% review meter from the critics, 84% from the audience, and the critics' consensus. While over the top and gory, RoboCop is also a surprisingly smart sci-fi flick that uses ultra-violence to disguise its satire of American culture. Like, you'd look at the poster and you'd say, that's just a guy, a poxy guy in a suit. Like, there can't be more to it than that. So, Ed, my question just straight out, having watched it, would you say you enjoyed it or not?
Oh, I loved it. It's a fantastic film. It's a fantastic film, man. And it's a fantastic film because it works on those layers. And Verhoeven, he did it again. He did the same film, not the same film again, but he did this multi-layered thing again. You know, this lampooning of American culture in Starship Troopers a couple of years later. And both films work on just a super violent, really stupid, for want of a better phrase, action movie. Because that's what it is at the skin, you know. If you don't watch it, you can sit there and look at this and just go, this is just a guy in a plastic robot suit using machine guns at every single opportunity, and you know, kicking villains into vats of toxic acid waste. It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. But it's working on a whole other level as well, and commentary about American violence and capitalism and so on. It's really, really tightly and neatly woven together, and it doesn't hit you over the head with it. In fact, I think it's probably better in that sense than Starship Troopers. Starship Troopers it's another one of my favorite films, and the same director, Paul Verhoeven, again, but it does beat you around the head a little bit more than RoboCop does with the satire that it's trying to impose upon you.
It's the same writer as well. Ed Neumeier wrote that one as well. It was actually funny, just literally before we recorded this podcast, I was walking down with my fiance from the shop, and I was telling her we were recording this, and she told me that she was always scared of RoboCop when she was younger because she didn't understand who exactly RoboCop was or what RoboCop was indeed actually doing. When you look at it in terms of the, like, if you're trying to break down what kind of movie it is, like, IMDb says action, crime, sci-fi, but like, you can put in comedy inside there very easily. Put in social commentary as well. There is so much going on. It's actually unbelievable. Like, it's just, actually, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to ask you a question straight out from this. Who are the main bad guys in this movie? And what is each of their motivation?
Yeah, so there's two buckets of bad guys, right? There's there's the the bad guys with the guns who are doing the stealing and then the killing the cops and all that kind of good stuff, and you know your villain played by Kurtwood Smith, he's the bad guy, but then behind that is corporate America, you know, if this kind of faceless global corporation that are in fact potentially the bigger bad guys, and you see how they place no value on human life. Everything's about the profit, you know, they'll cut each other up to get ahead. It's a real comment on corporate culture in America, and corporate culture in America, I guess, in the 80s when, you know, Wall Street and cocaine and all that other good stuff going on and at its absolute zenith. Greed is good and all that stuff. So there's two buckets of bad guys, and then you find where RoboCop is mashed between the middle of them, right? You know, he gets killed by the nemesis guy, the Kurtwood Smith type character. But what corporate America then does to him afterwards is arguably worse, you
So,
know.
Ed, sum it up. Tell us the story of RoboCop.
Yeah, so RoboCop. So, oh man, I'm gonna have to think back to this film that I watched 6 weeks ago and try to remember it, because we have been very tardy in our recording schedules lately. So the 90 seconds RoboCops with Bunny's version that you would find on YouTube is you have this cop who's in suburban Detroit in the future. It's a lawless society, incredibly violent, cops getting killed all the time. He becomes one of them. He gets sent to this crappy precinct and kind of gets killed almost instantly. He has a partner who's a female cop. She's possibly the only beacon of warmth in the whole film, throughout the whole thing. But anyway, he gets killed. And in the background, as that's happening, because the law enforcement has been privatized, they now own his remains and they can do what they like with him. And there's this tug of war going on in the boardroom between the guy who wants this, you know, fully robotic, two-legged machine gun toting thing. It's like something you see like from MechWarrior or one of these video games, except for it can't go downstairs, which seems to be a huge design flaw, colossal design issue with the future of robotic law enforcement. So you have that side of it, and then you have the other side of it who want to build this kind of cyborg from a human or the remains of a human and plug him in with gears and mechanics and basically make him bulletproof and pretty much indestructible, but he's also retaining some human parts where he has to be fed. And then the whole movie from there evolves into this quest for RoboCop to do what he does, which is be a kick-ass cop, but also gradually he's uncovering his humanity as he goes along. And you have this whole debate all the way through the film. It's not verbalized, but it's plainly obvious on the screen that is it, what is he? You know, is he a human that is now mostly mechanical? Is he a robot that has vaguely mechanical parts, or is he just all robot and incapable of humanity? And I like as the movie evolves, he gets more and more human, I think. I you know, at the very as we move forward, you start to see his face. So you spend 80% of the film, all you could see is his chin, which seems to be the primary reason Paul Weller was cast, because of his chin. And then as it goes on, you can see more and more of his face, and that brings in more and more of his humanity. And by the end of the film, he's quite a human character. You know, he's cracking jokes and, well, crack of jokes. He's got quite a killer cold clothes. Is there cold clothes? Is that a thing? Which is was very, very 80s, and I won't spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it, like me.
But hang on
Even
a
though I'm
second
probably the
then,
only human alive.
who'd never actually managed to
Yeah.
get around to actually seeing RoboCop. What do you think? Is Murphy dead or not?
Yeah, I think he is. Yeah.
So what at the end of the movie, like we're just going to spoil it. If you're listening to this podcast, you've seen it, because it has such a great ending after he kills Dick Jones, and then the old man just says to him, you know, my shooting son, what's your name? And he says, Murphy. Is he saying Murphy as in I am Murphy, or B, is he saying I know I was a human called Murphy, but basically that's it, I am actually a robot. I'm a robot now.
I think it's B. I don't. I can't see a scenario where he recovers enough of his humanity to say return to being the family man that he was. That's gone from that part of him is dead. I think it's a robot acknowledging that he has human past, but he is unquestionably a robot. You know, he's metallic. He walks around like a robot. He is. If you were to ask the child to sit down and draw a robotic police officer, this is what they would draw.
I like
And I don't mean that as an insult. I mean it's really, really well done, you know.
I like the fact that, again, because it's the, you know, the cinema is 87 was an absolutely brilliant year for movies. My brother Vincent always remembers saying that the three big movies of 87 were RoboCop, Predator, and The Untouchables. They were the three that you needed to watch at the time. But back in those days, like, it was a very clear distinction between who was good and who was bad and things like that. And your main character didn't necessarily need to have as much depth to it. So when you talk about, you know, Murphy, you talk about a slight reference to his son at the start of the film when he's talking to Lewis, and he does the TJ laser thing where he's spinning his gun, which RoboCop then does later in the movie, which is unbelievably cool. And there's that reference. And then later in the movie, when RoboCop goes to the house and just sees that, you know, the house is gone, he's the memories kind of coming flooding back and things like that. But that's it. Like, the whole, like, the drive of the film isn't for him to recapture his humanity. I don't feel, anyway, not in it. Like, it's not a case of he's trying to reconcile with his family or anything like that. Like, you know, going to house, hello, honey, I am home. I am now a robot.
Where's my green paste?
Actually, that's one thing that did stand out for me in the movie. Like, there was so much of the movie that works in terms of just keeping it simple with the cybernetics and how RoboCop looked. Just that meal.
Why does he
thing.
Have to eat?
Yeah, just there going, it just looked absolutely kind of absolutely ludicrous. Question for you then, right? You were mentioning, so we mentioned the main two bad guys, right? So you've got Kurtwood Smith, who plays Clarence Boddicker, who is an absolute creep of the highest order, but is absolutely brilliant at it. He's just phenomenal. I've literally got an entire list of Boddicker things that I have to talk about because he's just glorious. Dick Jones, who is, you know, the main crime, you know, criminal here, played by Ronnie Cox. I'm curious. Miguel Ferrer plays Bob Morton, who is in charge of the RoboCop project. Is he good, or is he just there? I just want to get up the corporate ladder. I couldn't give a damn.
Yeah, I think he's ambivalent. I don't think he's evil in the sense that he's doing things which are highly ethically questionable, but he's not doing them because he's bad. He's doing them because that's what he needs to do to get ahead. But he's not checking himself either, you know.
Like, there's a great scene when they're trying to, you know, after Murphy's dead, and they're kind of, you see the development of RoboCop, and they're there going, you know, oh, we can actually save his left arm. And he's basically nope, lose the arm. Basically, yeah, I don't want any of it. Just basically chop off his arm. I'm absolutely fine with it and things like that. And it's so kind of, again, it's just so like, I just don't give a damn. And it's funny then, because when he is, when his character is talking to one of the Smithers type character, I can't think of your man's name off the top of my head, and basically they're effectively there going like, well, he signed the contract, he's legally dead, we can do whatever the hell we want with him. Like they as a corporation just do not care at all about you know, about you. And like, it is hit home so many times in the movie how like it's all about the corporation. And just actually on that point, I just have to bring, like, I just, when I was, I watched it back today, and I decided I'll go through all the news segments later when we talk about Satire, because they're hilarious.
They but are brilliant, yeah.
I'm just looking at the ads, and there's the first ad you see is for the Family Heart Center. And it's basically this doctor explaining that you can just basically buy, you know, like a new, an artificial heart. And he's giving all the brand names, like a Yamaha heart. And all this it's just complete and utter, like, we don't care. It's all about money. And we have to talk about the Ed 209 scene at the start of the film, which is one of the most gratuitous and glorious moments that you're ever going to see in television.
Yeah. They were kind of mad with the blood bags, didn't they? So there was no blood bags left for movies in 88 and 89 because they were all used on RoboCop.
And the funny thing is, the version you probably watched, Ed, was probably the
toned down Netflix version.
Version. Because the full version goes on a few seconds longer, like, because your man is absolutely, like, he's eviscerated, like, by Ed 209. And I know the fact that as soon as Ed 209 is clearly malfunctioning, you see the all the scientists in the background freaking out, trying to pull all the wires and the cables and all that kind of thing. And after he's dead, the old man says, "Dick, I'm very disappointed."
Yeah,
and Dick just goes, "It was just a glitch." And literally, there's your man dead in the corner, like you can see him in the background.
Yeah, you get the feeling that their I don't know, their CSR program is a bit weak, isn't it?
And the fact that then, like, you see then, like, the very next scene is when Bob Morton is going down the lift with the Smithers character. And, like, literally, they'd been in the lift with Kenny like 20 minutes earlier, and the Smithers character says, "That was, too bad about Lenny," and Bob Morton just says, "That's life in the big city." Like, it's like your man's dead, like blown to a million pieces. They do not care. And see, a lot of the stuff I think with the corporatism, it's just thrown in so fast that you mightn't even pick up on it. Like with the whole Ed 209 thing, like as Dick Jones basically says, he didn't like it wasn't about the thing working at all. Like he had all the government contracts, he had spare parts for like 20 years, and he basically straight out says, "Who cares if it even works?"
No, he's right. Like, but that kind of commentary, there's a streak of that in a lot of 80s films. That's there in Aliens as well, when people talk about the company and all the badness that it does, and it controls everything, and in the end they're trying to kill people in order to bring the aliens back to Earth. So this is a commentary running through Hollywood, I think, in the mid to late 80s for sure.
Yeah, because at that point, like the enemy was, as you said, corporate greed. Like as you said with Aliens, there's a great line in it. I'm paraphrasing, and just in case I get it fully wrong, but Sigourney Weaver says to Paul Reiser, basically say what you will about the aliens, but you don't see them fucking each over for a percentage point. And you're going, yeah, you're kind of completely, absolutely accurate with that kind of thing. One thing as well about this that I really do appreciate is that there is the Lewis Murphy relationship there, but it's not a will they won't they at any point. Like you actually have a male and female lead that you don't have to be questioning, are they going to get it on or any nonsense like that.
Largely because he doesn't have parts, but it's true though. Like I said earlier, she's the warmth in the movie. She's the little bit of humanity that exists, and it really like doesn't exist anywhere. Even your lead character, your good guy, it's how human is he? That's the whole part of the whole point of the film. We don't know. She's the one kind of bastion of infallible human warmth that exists. And she's the last person to lose faith in Murphy as a person, which is interesting, I think.
And it's a kind of like it's like as you see as well, like the question you'd want to ask yourself is this a world you'd even want to live in? Like, because everything about it seems absolutely horrible. Like it's desperate. Like you can see, the cops are getting busy mowed down, like OCP don't care because they themselves are driving up the crime. They want to build, Delta City, and Dick Jones is there going, and if you do that, bring in more drugs, prostitution, you can basically make all the money. Dick Jones doesn't give a damn about that or anything along those lines. You even see when Murphy is brought in by the paramedics, they almost kind of, it's almost like they're just giving up on him straight away. They're going, yeah, whatever, look, it's fine. Like, it's
Just
too.
move on.
And he, like you even see at the very start of the film, one of the cops, Fredericks, I think, or what's his name, Frank Fredrickson. Like he's, like you see when Murphy reports into the police station and they're talking about, that he's critical. Like the next scene, his name is being taken off the locker that he's dead. And then it's so funny. There's just all these cops like who are going through hell. And then there's just this one nerd cop who's holding onto the box and they're there going, "If you have any donations for the family, give them here." Your man's there, "Hi, how are things? Give me any donations and things like that." But then you see this grim side of the world, but then you see the absolute utter satire of the world, which is hugely centered around all the news segments, which I have to go through them because they're hilarious. And they describe so much horrible, horrible things, but it's delivered with a big smile. And it's kind of like everything's fine. It's all absolutely like we start off with there's issues in Pretoria where there's a nuclear threat has just happened. Then you have the Star Wars program where there was a power failure and a loss of gravity. The next part is three dead policemen and one who's injured, and it's Frank Fredrickson. At the very end, the news reporter goes, "Good luck, Frank." It's just Complete, don't care at all. Next one's when the RoboCop is in the schools, and I just love him. The interviewer asks RoboCop a question. He says, "Do you what advice do you have for the kids?" And just the way he menacingly turns to the camera and says, "Stay out of trouble." Like nothing at all kind of helpful. Fighting in Acapulco is another one. Labor leaders agree to build Delta City. The best one of all is still I can't stop laughing at this every time I watch the movie. Is in Santa Barbara, the Star Wars missile, which was referenced earlier on, it misfired, killing 113 people, including two former presidents. And like,
Yeah.
it's interspersed with these ads about, like, the Red Alert game that, a family
Oh, isn't
sitting
that amazing? I want to play that.
around. And then I love the ad for the 6000 SUX car, and like just at the bottom it says
6,000 slugs.
8.2 miles per gallon.
Yeah.
Like,
It's
there's
just,
just it's so much satire about America and the world
yeah,
at the time, like, and
it's all like it's all social commentary on, it's America with the volume turned up to 11, and it's set against this backdrop of like Thatcher, Reagan, Nixon, all that economic stuff, and the corporatism that that brings and the privatization of everything. Like, it's unquestionably a social commentary, quite a political movie in that sense, but it's a rejection of all of these ideas that had been to the fore in the US and here in Europe, all the way through the early 80s into the mid 80s, and starting to come unraveled as we come to the end of Thatcher and things like that,
And I think it's one of those things that, and it's one of the things that came across in the episode of the movies that made us as well, that they were actually glad that they got Paul Verhoeven to direct it, because the feeling was, because he was European, he would have a better perspective on how to
Yep.
present the American dream rather than how an American direct. Like, if you put this movie in the hands of an American director, absolutely, it just
It's a
wouldn't
different
have.
film. It's just another 80s action movie.
Yeah, exactly. And apparently, originally, when he was given the script, he wouldn't do it. He didn't like it at all. Like, and it was his wife read it and
Talked him into it. Yeah.
basically said, "Look, there's actually a lot of stuff here." Because again, kind of goes back to what we said in terms of how many kind of layers the movie actually kind of has in it. Like the
And didn't he blow the budget out of all existence as well, I
oh,
believe.
completely.
Completely
Like, yeah,
overspent.
I think because like if you think of it, even like. It the name of the movie alone, like, screams B movie, like RoboCop, like
Absolutely.
it's
This thing
just
could have been released and went like straight to VHS and quickly been forgotten.
it,
It
like
really
it's
could, like, it really could.
like I'd watch a lot of Red Letter Media on YouTube, like, and they do things like Best of the Worst, and you'd see some of the worst movies out there, and you'd see some of the names of the movies, and like it could have easily have been like RoboCop there, because
Yeah.
it, like, again, in the movie that made us, the one of the producers, like, she's straight away there going, "We're not calling the movie RoboCop." Like, you just
Seriously.
absolutely can't call it RoboCop. Like, it's ludicrous when you think of it. But the thing is, though, it absolutely, it works. Like I'm looking at the poster here. Like, it's so 1980s, and it's absolutely just, again, you. I was going to say you don't get movies like this anymore, and that's true, because they remade it in, I think it was 2014, and it was absolutely horrific. It was terrible. Did you see the
Yeah.
remake?
No, I didn't. Sure, I never saw the original.
God, the remake, it takes everything out of that. This the basically he is aware of who he is in the remake and all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, and you're kind of there going, but that's not interesting, like, at all. Like there's a lot of ambiguity with with Murphy in this, which is kind of what you want, because it's a movie that you can go into it and you get what you want. If you want the satire, you have it. If you want the comedy, you've also got that. If you want to have a movie where or the existential question is he a man or is he a machine? You've also got that. If you want hilarious, over the top ultra violence, you have
You have it in spades, kid.
you
It's a
have.
big truck full of it.
Like, I had to write down all the ultraviolence that I could actually find in the movie, and I was there going, "This is absolutely insane." We discussed the Ed 209 killing Kenny, like, which is just Absolutely magnificent. Like, it's just.
Was didn't somebody take the piss out of this? Was it oh, what was the Arrow, Broken Arrow, Flame? No,
Oh, John
this is
Travolta
absolute no. This is terrible podcasting now. It was a piss take movie, but it was based on the Air Force and weaved in bits of Rambo. And
it. Oh
remember,
yeah, I know
somebody
John
got shot through the heart with a chicken. Remember that film?
Travolta,
Yeah, so that's the one. Now you remember. But there was a scene in that movie where he's just standing there with a machine gun shooting people, and it's got the death count rolling up and
yeah.
rolling up and
Yeah.
rolling up, and eventually it gets to more than RoboCop.
Hot Shots Part
Hot
Two.
Shots. There you go.
It's
Yeah.
yeah, like it starts saying like equal to Terminator and all this
Yeah.
kind of. It keeps on counting off that film. I haven't seen that in years, and it was absolutely like that was ludicrous. I think by the end of it, he's on like the front section of a boat, and all he's standing on is actually the shells that he has shot out of the
Yes.
gun.
Oh, that's a brilliant. I must actually watch it again.
If you haven't seen Hot Shots Part Two, people, please, please watch it. It is so absolute nonsense. Like, actually, the chicken scene when he
And the scene,
winds up the chicken and the chicken's eyes go wide.
and he goes into the fight. Remember, he goes into the fight with, and he wraps the bandages around his hands, and then he drips them in sprinkles from an ice cream.
And then he puts it into gummy bears then as well.
Yeah.
This is turning into a commentary
Getting
on
way
Hot
off
Shots
topic.
Part
Yeah,
Two.
way off topic. What else is new for us?
Actually, there's the killing of Murphy is actually quite gruesome. It is
Yeah.
quite like the movie starts off, and you're kind of there. What kind of tone do we have here? And Murphy comes across as actually quite a nice guy, like, and he looks like, you know, kind of a nice family guy and all that kind of thing. And like the, and again, you probably saw the unrated or the original version of the. Basically, of him being killed, like there is extra scene, you know, two extra scenes that are always cut from it. Like, but
They kill him twice.
yeah, they bring him back to life and he's murdered for the second time. So you see his hand getting blown off, that's
Yeah.
or his hand, right? But then you actually see his right arm getting blown off. I don't, did you see that part?
No,
No, that was the version you didn't see. And then there is an unbelievable prosthetic that they made of Peter Weller's character, where they actually do a full, kind of a full camera pan of him when Clarence Boddicker shoots him in the head, and basically the bullet comes out the other side,
Yeah.
and like it's understandable, you know, it's absolutely like it's horrific. Like it goes on for like bones of 30, 40 seconds, and you know because you know they start shooting him, then Lewis kind of runs along, and they're still shooting him at the same time, like and like.
Yeah.
There's no music. There's no nothing. It's just a man getting basically, you know, unrelentingly murdered.
Yeah, it's dark. Like, it's dark as it gets, but again, it's for Oven. He's turning up the volume to 11 or 12, you know, on violence, and that's what he does. And I think they knew that when they hired him.
And the thing is, it's one of those things that, like, some of the violence gets so over the top that you could actually. How to put it? It almost goes into parody, but it
It
is
does, yeah.
treated so seriously. Like, you know, the killing of Jeepers of Murphy. Like, did it need to be as long as it was? No, they could have just shot him in the head straight away. But the fact that it goes on for so long, does it cross into like parody? And it doesn't. And it just comes across as like it's actually almost uncomfortable watching, like, because it is very gruesome.
But there are those like those parody slapstick elements in it, like the scene towards the end of the movie where the guy gets melted with the toxic waste, you know. Now that's slapstick comedy. It just is, and it's you'll laugh at it when you watch it. It's laughable. It's brilliant.
It's hilarious because, and then when he goes over to, I think it's Leon is the name of the guy that he goes up to. Yeah, Leon. And Leon basically is there going, get the hell away from me, man.
Yeah.
He's there going, I don't want anything to do with you. And then, like, but a minute later, Clarence Boddicker drives into him and basically just explodes him completely.
Yeah.
Like, it's absolutely disgusting. Like, they were saying as well with the, like, even the gas station explosion, apparently, they'd, Verhoeven kept saying he wanted bigger and he wanted bigger and he wanted bigger. I think he annoyed the effects department so much they decided to give him A ginormous
Yeah.
explosion, which unfortunately apparently was actually much bigger than expected, and it smashed a load of windows in the area.
But subsequently replicated, like there's a lot of films since with gas station explosions in them. I don't know, was it the first? Hard to believe it was the first, but it's rife for it's you know, it's almost a trope at this point, the number of films. If you want a big explosion, have a gunfight in a gas station.
The I love the interaction with the nerd inside there, and he's doing plane geometry, and Emil is basically there going, "Hey, do you think you're smarter than me?" Kind of No. Like he's 100% getting killed. Like there's
Yeah.
absolutely no doubt about it. I love RoboCop's catchphrase in the scene, obviously, because again, it's a callback, so you can understand, dead or alive, you're coming with me. Like it's perfect for a trailer, isn't it? Like.
Yeah. It's brilliant. But it's it has these one-liners sprinkled throughout it, with just calling back, even calling back to Western films and things like this. Intentional playing on tropes and Americana to make the film appealing, I think, and it works very, very well. Even though they are tropes, you know, like the whole, like you said earlier, on the whole gun spinning thing, that's straight out of 50s Western films,
Oh, completely
you
like it.
know.
And in fairness, it just looks cool. It really kind of does, like, because again, it adds a kind of small element of kind of, humanity to, the character that he is doing something like that. Like, again, it's just a way for, Lewis to kind of recognize the fact that it is. Because otherwise, like, they'd probably be asking, wait a second, what the hell is he doing? Why is he actually, doing such a thing?
But it points to the whole absurdity of the whole thing as well, you know. It's intentionally, there's no robot you're going to build that'll do that, because why would it? Because why would you program that into it? So it's mocking itself by its very actions, you know.
Like you could actually sit here and talk about how cool some of the action set pieces actually are. Like the shootout in the drug factory is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
He just, like it's the music is brilliant. The heroic music of RoboCop is playing, and he is just absolutely mowing everybody down. And it's just glorious to watch. There's a great wide action shot at one point. There's a guy like only a couple of feet away from him, and just RoboCop just obliterates him with his gun. The gun is absolutely class as well, I have to
Yeah, it's
say. It is
ridiculous.
absolutely brilliant. Like the I love the fact that then RoboCop just basically throws Clarence Boddicker through three different panes of glass just because he doesn't like it anymore. There is actually one thing I have to bring up as well. It's going through the because we have on RoboCop's like from when you start seeing the RoboCop stuff being applied to Luke Murphy and all that, and it's kind of like your su superhero origin part of the movie, like, and it kind of goes on, and then you see him going out on the streets for the first time, and you have to do the whole what crimes has he solved, like, and the first, and then you have the robbery, and basically like RoboCop probably causes more damage to the shop than actually what the robber would have taken if he'd gotten the safe from the elderly couple. But the and you obviously have the when he saves the lady who was being attacked by the two lads as well, and it's just she runs up to him, she's basically saying thank you, and it just he says the right things, but like he's just this cold robot, and there's no reassurance at all from him towards her. But the hostage scene is just, there's one thing in this that stands out, and it's like something from The Simpsons. And like, I've been reading up on different things about RoboCop. No one references it, and I think it's absolutely hilarious. It's a 1 second scene. You see all the cops outside the mayor's office where the hostage situation is happening and all this kind of and they're all trying to talk to the mayor and all this kind of thing, and you see the police tape up and all this, and then suddenly out of nowhere you just see RoboCop's car coming along. It's not going fast, there's no tight end, sudden the car zooms around the corner, the car just slowly drives along, just rips right through the tape. I just think it's absolutely hilarious because it just shows they're going, I don't really care. I've shown up now. I'm the one who's going to solve your
I'm doing
poverty
this my way.
problem.
Keep him talking.
Yeah, that's all he says to him.
Yeah,
Like,
yeah.
and I love the fact then that when your man is giving his demands, and he's basically there going, "Yo, I want a recount. I want my old job back. Yo, I want the corner office." Then they're there going, "What else do you want?" And he wants says, "I want a car. I want it. It has to be fast with shitty mileage." And then when you're, and then your man says, "Hey, how about the 6,000 SUX?" And then your man goes, "Does that come with cruise control?" It's just,
It's
again,
brilliant.
it's so like there's no, it's how, like I'd often discuss with Sean about Star Trek things. Some things that makes me laugh is that when there's no need for it, and this is a
Yeah, put
perfect example.
it
Yeah,
in
you
anyway.
just throw it in because it's absolutely ludicrous. And I know the fact then that RoboCop, you know, reaches through the wall and drags him out. So RoboCop at this point is basically subdued your man, but RoboCop still decides, "I'm going to punch this guy out the
Yeah. And I knock him into next week just because I've got a robotic fist and I can. And they that car comes up again, don't they? Blow that car up later in the film.
That's in my list of Clarence Boddicker being an
Yeah, yeah,
absolute prick of the highest order,
yeah.
because it's just, they're so, like, what's great about Clarence Boddicker is that the writer said he wanted him to have glasses because he wanted him to be like an intelligent guy. Like, Boddicker is not an idiot by any
No.
stretch of the imagination. He's a very smart, very cunning individual, like, and you see it in the movie, like he's utterly just, he's just despicable in absolutely every way. Like when he kills Bob Morton, when he calls over to his house, like, you know, even, and I hate, look, I'm quoting the movie when I say this line, and he just walks into Bob's into the house, and he tells the women to leave, and he just says, "Bitches, leave." It's just ridiculous the way he just delivers the line. Like, and even before the like even when he's taking out the grenade, where he just uses his tongue to take the pin out of it, like, and he
Yeah.
just basically says nothing at all to Bob Morton, like, as you know, Morton is basically scrambling for his life. And before the drug bus or the drug place shootout, when he's talking to your man Sal and he's trying to negotiate with him, and your man wants something to do with him, and he's drinking wine, it's just the way he puts two fingers into the wine and it just puts it up to his
Yeah, yeah,
nose.
yeah.
Like, it's
You'd
just.
wonder how much that is improv, you know. You think a lot of it. You would hope a lot of it, you know. He's a
He
fine actor. He's a very, very good actor.
and like, because he was in last week's episode, which, where we when we discussed
Dead
the Poets
Poets, yeah.
Society. Yeah, exactly. And like, he was saying himself that, like, at the time, you know, he was a bit of a struggling actor, and he'd gotten the script, and he was kind of there going, he saw the title, and his first reaction was, "Oh, not this."
Yeah.
Basically, is
Not
this
this
my.
80s crap again.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. Yeah, but he was determined he was going to have like some fun with it. Like, so what you were saying about improv, after RoboCop literally throws him through three different panes of glass and is effectively just out to murder him, when he arrests him and he brings him in, Kurtwood Smith said, he said to Paul Verhoeven, he said, instead of signing his name, he said, "How about I just spit blood
Yeah,
on the thing?"
yeah.
And again, it's just brilliant. It's disgusting. It's completely contemptuous of everything that's going on. And then the way he just kind of says, "Just give me my fucking phone call." Just absolutely great.
Yeah,
Like,
yeah. He's a brilliantly constructed character, and he lives and breathes it, you
oh,
know.
he does. Like they nailed so much of the casting with it. There's just two more points I have with it. Like, when he calls into Dick Jones the very next day, like, and you know the office is destroyed, and he's trying to flirt with Dick Jones's secretary. Actually, turns out
You
that's
know who she
Kurtwood,
is, right?
his
Yeah.
wife in real life. Yeah,
Yeah.
and the way he just, you know, his face is still, you know, wrecked, like, from all the panes of glass. So he just takes out his gum and he puts it on her, flipping off the thing. Going,
What a
how
scumbag, like, what a grade
utterly
A
just.
scumbag.
And what you said then, like, when, you know, effectively all the police go on strike, and then the gang meet up before they hunt down RoboCop, and I think it's, yeah, Joe Cox is there with the exact same car, and Boddicker's there, like, "I'm the top dog, only I can have this car, I'm going to blow up his car," and he
No one
blows up
else.
just for the simple reason that he's the one who has to actually blow it up. It's
Yeah.
brilliant. He's absolutely, he's It's just when you go through the casting, there was just so much of it is absolutely just they're all so strong in their own way, in the way that it absolutely kind of needs to work as well. And it carries out so well. Like, you've got so many bad guys in terms of, like, even the old man. The question is, and this is the question I was really trying to work out when I was watching it today, is does the old man really give a damn, or is he just completely out of touch?
Is he centered in his own universe? And like you say, I think he's out of touch. I don't.
Because he talks about Delta City, that it's going to be the future, but Dick Jones sees Delta City as basically a way to grab more of a power base and get more money.
Yeah. I think he's. Is he where Dick Jones is going, though, in 30 years? Do you know what I mean? And he was once Dick Jones. I don't know. I don't think he gives it. I don't think he cares. I mean, he, like you said, he got riddled full of bullets by the robot that can't go upstairs in the office, and his reaction was, "I'm a bit disappointed." So he's not a bleeding heart liberal.
And that's the good thing about it, because then you've effectively got the tree, right? You've got the old man, you've got Dick Jones, you've got Bob Morton. So you've got the old man who's out of touch, right? You've got Dick Jones who wants the old man's job but is completely corrupt, and even his own Ed 209 is basically never going to work, and it's not going to be, an accurate thing at all. But then you've got Bob, whose actual plan for RoboCop is actually the most viable solution, and it works. But is it almost by accident rather than design? Because, like, he sneaks in at the right time when, Ed 209 malfunctions, and he gets his chance to talk to the old man. He says, "Listen, this is the actual plan." Because then, when you fast forward into RoboCop, I'm going to take a wild guess. You haven't seen RoboCop 2, have you?
You got it in one.
Yeah. Anyways, there's a scene. So in RoboCop 2, there's a montage. Like, the movie isn't as good. It's completely bananas. But there's a montage at one point where they're trying to introduce RoboCop 2, like a second version of RoboCop, and basically all of them malfunction in their own different way. And, like, it is absolutely hilarious. Like, it's awful. Because, like, they're basically taking, like, convicts and all this kind of thing and trying to make a new RoboCop, and it's all completely gone wrong. Like, so again, the whole thing is like, and the thing is, when you think of this movie, we can look at it and kind of say, "Oh, it's great, RoboCop won the day." But, like, RoboCop is just one cop, and, like, OCP has ruined the police force, and, like, where they are, I think it's Metro South, I think it is. Like, crime isn't going to stop in
No.
any circumstances. Not there. Like, it's absolutely going to continue. Like.
But there's money to be made off it. Like, it's not in OCP's interest for there to be no crime, because if there's no crime, then there's no police contract. Do you know what I mean? The whole thing is a self-perpetuating cycle. And
And you think, I suppose the thing is, then, when you think of it, like, this is the, like, the 80s was a decade where, like, people really started pointing the finger at corporate America for being the bad guys, where previously it was just straight out bank robbers or drug dealers or something like that. And these are
simpler.
the, yeah, it, much more, much easier to kind of explain motivation, like why they wanted the money or why they wanted to cause chaos. But these movies, again, like, we can talk about movies like RoboCop and say, "Oh, they're just dumb action movies," but they're not. There's a lot there. Like, and the motivations behind all the characters are so different in terms of what they want to achieve. And as you said, there's only one good character taking out RoboCop in the movie, and it's Lewis. And she's the only person in the movie who's got any kind of decency about her.
Yeah, she seems to be incorruptible. I wonder why, though. Why is she different than everybody else? What about her lets her stand outside all of the other cops who are all tired and jaded, and Murphy seems to be before he gets blown into 57 billion pieces twice.
But the only thing
He's
is, though, he seems to trans like he when he transfers in from the other station, he seems to not be as weary as the rest of them.
Yeah,
Like,
that's what I'm saying. That's where I was going with it. He's not as beat down as the rest of them. But obviously, it doesn't end well for him. And his humanity is taken.
but
But
the thing is,
her humanity is never taken. And why does she, what's special about her, I suppose, is what I'm driving at.
but is
And
like is the point of her character then to try, basically, if she's not in the movie, does RoboCop recover like who he actually
Yeah, I don't know.
is.
I mean, he's the like she's the juxtaposition between all of the Bob Mortimer characters and all the Corbett and the Kirkwood Kirkwood
Kirkwood.
Smith character, yeah, and RoboCop, the Weller character. Like she stands as a juxtaposition to all of those groups for various different reasons. She's the anti all of that. Is she the you know, if it was a Western, she'd be the good cowboy in the white hat,
Yeah.
riding right to left across the screen, you know? She's the simple character in that sense, I suppose.
Because when you think of it, there is a reference as well in the steel mill after RoboCop has been attacked by the police himself, and he says, "What happened to Murphy's wife and son?" And basically, Lewis says, effectively, they thought you were dead and they moved on. Like, so the one thing that you don't really get in this is you enough a full understanding of the passage of time between the time that Murphy is actually shot. Because, like, you do get the montage and you know time has passed, but you don't know how long has actually passed. Like, the scene in his house is quite haunting because, like, it's really weird. It's the salesman of the future. Like, there's no one there to greet you. It's just basically a computer, like basically a computer tower that is explaining it to you. But the house is still in a bit of ruin. Like, it, you can see, there's stuff that's burnt there. There's dead flowers there. There's a half burnt, picture of Murphy and his family and all that kind of thing. Like, so from Murphy's kind of point of view, he has the memories, but there's nothing that's kind of anchoring him back to the old life outside of Lewis. And when you think of it in the context of the movie, like literally he's murdering his first day, like literally they went out for a drive, got a coffee, and then the next thing is he's dead. And that's basically the end of it then. And that's really it. And I think the fact that, like, when you see all the other cops, and like, again, what's great about this movie as well is there's so many things that happen. It's like it tells you so much in short bursts without you needing to see too much. Like the scene when Murphy reports for duty and is brought down to the locker room, you just see how broken all of them are, how unhappy they are, how much they hate OCP, they want to go on strike, that basically they can't keep doing what they're doing. And he's coming into this, horrific world, and then he meets Lewis. And I really like the scene when they're getting coffee, and a slight bit of humanity comes in. He's twirling the gun. Lewis is basically asking what's it about. And he talks about TJ Laser and all this kind of thing. And she sees truth, and he's going, "Yeah, look, she knows that Murphy does it himself because he thinks it's cool. Murphy's trying to say, no, I'm doing it for my son because my son likes TJ Laser and all this kind of thing." And you have this nice little kind of connection then between them. Like, and then you see it as well after RoboCop has his nightmare and then is kind of, walking down the corridor, and she stops him. She asks him who he is. And I think it's the first time that, like, all the kind of thoughts that he has, which aren't making sense, suddenly someone comes along and asks him, and it's a connection that's then built between what these thoughts are, what this person has asked, who clearly knows who he is.
That scene of him, you just brought that back to me there. That scene of him walking down the corridor is an important scene in the film, I think, in that it sets it's kind of the first time we see him moving, isn't it? Like there's a lot of scenes and where you only see parts of him. You see out through his eyes, you see his feet. But that's the first kind of scene where he's animated, and the noise is quite impressive of it, and he's very clearly set up there as no longer human. He's this huge metallic object.
No, I think it's after. I think at this point he's done his first day out murdering people, beating people up and
Murdering people
all
in the name of law and order.
No, he yeah he has because when you
Okay,
first,
I'm getting my timeline in my head confused.
yeah,
Sorry.
in fairness, how they do the reveal is excellent. Like, it's just
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
like when you first he like as you said, the noise he makes, like the footsteps noise he makes, the computer noise he makes. And just, I love, in fairness to him, Peter Weller and the guy that he worked with first, they did it so brilliantly. Like it's just when he walks at times and he's coming to like where he has to turn left, turn right, either his body turns and his head keeps going, then his head turns, or his head turns first and his body turns. And it's so robotic, and it's just absolutely, it's so well done. But yeah, in the context of the film, if I remember correctly, yeah, they show the introduction. Then he goes onto the streets, then he does all that, and then it shows him later, and he has the dream, And then he goes off because I think, yeah, that's when he leaves the police station, he comes across your man Emil at the
At the gas
at
station.
the gas station. Yeah, that's the
And then it starts to, and off we go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh God, there was a question there I had, and it's just completely slipped my mind
I'm
now.
gonna go then, right? So we're 55 minutes in. Let's talk about the legacy.
How
The
okay, right?
legacy of Robocop.
How okay for a legacy of RoboCop, right? It was the 80s, and RoboCop with its ultra violence still got a cartoon.
There was toys to be sold. They weren't going to sell themselves. Yeah, I mean it's that simple, isn't it? I mean it's almost like its own self-parody. It spends the length of the film parodying corporate America and then becomes corporate America itself.
Like in terms of what you're saying with the legacy, like from they made the sequel, which I haven't seen in years, but it kind of has a similar tone. The third one, disastrous, completely just
Yeah, they're
made
just
for.
milking it now. Yeah,
Then
yeah.
you had the animated series. Then you had a TV series. I don't know if you remember the TV series.
No.
Yep, there was a TV series. There was the reboot, 2014, which was a complete disaster, and. Now, I did not know this, right? I think there is, I don't know if it came across on Amazon Prime. There's like three kind of like made for streaming movies that have recently come out. And
Right.
you're kind of there going.
Probably have Colin Farrell in them.
John, actually, I'm going to.
It up
I have to
now.
I have to actually look it up. One second there now.
If he is in them, I'm retiring from podcasting because I'll never top that.
So here we are, right? So RoboCop 2014, which is a remake. RoboCop 87, we're discussing. RoboCop 94, the TV show. RoboCop 2 was 1990. RoboCop 3 is 1993. RoboCop Prime Directives, never heard of it. Mother of God. There is so many of these flipping things. It's
And there was
actually.
a was there a NES or a SNES game? I have memory of playing this on the NES
Oh, there is definitely
with
those
a
kind of
with
things. Though.
a really
Yeah.
terrible targeting mechanism.
Yeah, like it was perfectly set up. Like there's actually a new RoboCop game coming out. I saw the trailer for it recently, and it actually did look pretty bloody cool. I don't know if you remember Neil Blomkamp. Do you remember he was supposed to make a new Alien, a new Alien film that would have taken place? Yeah, the guy who made like District 9, Elysium, and Chappie, he was going to make an Alien film which would have taken place after Aliens, so would have disregarded Alien 3 and Alien Resurrection, all that kind of thing, right? But then apparently he was going to be making a RoboCop film as well. For a while there, about 6 years ago, Neil Blomkamp was going to, bring all the greats back, and then they all got cancelled as well. So unfortunately, this was another one of those things that, like, it's just, oh my God, what? Good
And
Lord.
instead, we got Alien versus Predator.
Like, it's just, there's no universe here for like, good Lord. Yeah, there it is. The flipping TV series in 2001. It looks like a lot of short movies. There's no universe here for RoboCop. There just isn't. It's
No,
just
it's hard to push him beyond that kind of dystopian future in Detroit, isn't it?
like you might get like two is probably the max because you can't like there's nowhere to go. Like at the end of the day, he's we've dealt with the See, the thing is I haven't seen the second one and I'd have to watch it again, but like the end of the movie is you're there going, right, is he Murphy or is he not? That's what the whole question is going to be. I don't think the second film even remotely deals with it. And then you're kind of there going, but even if it does, what's the point? Like, then you're kind of there going, like, how is that going to kind of
Well,
work? Like,
what are you going to do with it? Like, how are you going to explore that more than you already have? You don't want to answer it, you know? Unless you have a vision in your mind of what he is as a director or as a creator.
I'm actually shocked as I'm looking through IMDb the amount of RoboCop stuff that has come up kind of after it because, he's not Batman, so there's not as it's going to be crime and corruption all the time, but like at least Batman is a vigilante and he goes around at night. Like you're not going to miss
But he.
RoboCop on the streets.
No, you're not. But he's got, like, Batman has this never ending stream of supervillains who don't exist in the RoboCop world. You
Yeah.
know, you're going to have another Clarence, or, you
Yeah.
know, I don't know, maybe you've got a Dolph Lundgren character or something, but you're going to run out of these people pretty soon. But there isn't a Green Goblin coming from anywhere, you know. So in that sense, his world is limited, his universe is limited. You're right.
And like I just thinking there, just in terms of like the like how many times I suppose can RoboCop either be his program, like basically his weakness is his programming, like that's all that's going to be. I'm just having a quick read here of the synopsis of the Prime Directive series. I think it's like four short movies. And it says 13 years after the original RoboCop, Delta City completely has become a futuristic city and owned by OCP, and RoboCop has begun to feel his age. He's a robot, that is. Murphy
Yeah,
finds
he
himself.
needs to be upgraded to like USB 2.0 instead of the spike that comes out of his hand.
Murphy finds himself nearly obsolete and must deal with the fact that his now grown son James isn't old. For the love of God!
Yeah, you
Oh
can stop there, like.
no, it's done. Sorry, dads. Like I just know. It's just like as a movie on its own, its legacy is absolutely secure. It is an absolutely wonderful, wonderful film. Like it's, we had discussed weeks ago about recording this, so I watched it, and like I had no problem sitting back down again today to watch it because it's just glorious. And what's great about it, and it's a complaint you have about movies is sometimes it takes ages to get into it. This movie is straight into
Oh
it.
no, there's no, like I said at the start, the first thing it does is drop you into the universe and you're immersed straight away. You know
Yeah.
exactly what's going on, you know the score. There's no, it's a bit like Judge Dredd in that way. I think it's, you're just within 5 minutes of starting the film, you know exactly how this world works, so it's really, really good like that.
And the same with the ending. The ending, it does not say that it's ending at all. Like RoboCop just comes along, destroys Ed 209, goes up to the boardroom, shoots Dick Jones, and just the ending is just it's just perfect. The old man just asks him what his name is. And Ed Newmar, the guy who wrote it, he said he'd seen the movie 4,000 times at this point, and he didn't want to go along to on the screens, but he did. And he said at the end, when the old man says, "What's your name?" and RoboCop says, "Murphy," he said it was the biggest cheer he'd ever heard go up. And you yourself feel it when you watch it, and you're going, "Absolutely!" And
Yeah, definitely. You're sitting there going, I'd buy that for a dollar.
it's and who was I'd buy that for a dollar based on, of course.
I know this. I
Come
know
on,
this.
get it
But
together.
no, you don't have
Slapstick
to tell me.
UK 70s, 80s, completely inappropriate. You'd never be able to watch it nowadays. The guy's name begins with a B, surname starts with a H. You
Benny
go,
Hill?
Benny Hill. Yeah. The lowest
Yeah.
common denominator of kind of TV
Yeah, TV
today.
comedy. Yeah.
So, Ed, final word on RoboCop.
I love it. I love it. If you haven't watched it, you should watch it. Although I think I'm probably the only human being alive who hadn't seen it. It is of its time, but it stands. I mean, some of the special effects have aged, of course. And you look at things like this 8-foot-tall robot sitting into a car and driving it like a human, which is completely absurd in a world now where cars drive themselves. But it's a brilliant story. It's working on several levels. It's really, really strong casting, brilliantly directed. And it's got a lot going. Like, it's, if you want your violence, if you want your slapstick, if you want your characters and your arc and all that stuff, it's all there. It's, all wrapped up in 80s retro stuff, which we all love now.
Yeah. No, fully agree. It's absolutely brilliant. There's like it's one of those films that it's just it like it's a perfect product of the 1980s. The 80s were a much simpler time for movies. Like sometimes you can say having more depth to movies makes them better, and that's fine. But sometimes you just want a good guy to be a good guy, and you want all the bad guys to be blatantly obvious, which is exactly what RoboCop gives you. I just love the fact that in the end, RoboCop murders every one of them except for one. Lewis kills one, but like it's just absolutely it's glorious. The action scenes are brilliant. The theme tune as well is absolutely phenomenal. And like if you want your hero shot, and all movies have them in some shape or form, it's the shootout in the drug lab when it's just RoboCop eviscerating absolutely everyone while it's glorious. Music plays and he's mowing them down. It's brilliant. If you haven't seen it, stop what you're doing, watch it. It's absolutely glorious. So, Ed, thank you very much for coming
Thank
on
you, Sean.
this week. I'm looking forward to what you pick next week, which will be probably some other absolutely glorious film that you've never seen.
Let's find
And
something you've never seen.
That's actually not that hard because I, unless it's a Channing Tatum film, I probably haven't seen
Yeah, Spider-Man 14. Yes.
it. Guys, thank you very much. Ed, thanks very much for joining us
No
again this
worries.
week. And we will
Good
talk to you
show.
next week.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye bye.